This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, April 25th, 2011. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar. Just ahead on Ozarks, the Springdale School District is striving to cut costs and become more energy efficient through the use of geothermal heat pumps in its schools. And a local company develops software to help athletes improve their exercise efficiency. But first,
the entire KUAF listening area remains under a flash flood watch through this evening after several days of heavy rains. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Northwest Arkansas and Northeast Oklahoma remain under a flash flood watch through this evening after widespread and heavy rain storms occurred over the weekend. In western Arkansas, a flood warning is in effect for the Arkansas River at Van Buren, affecting Crawford and Sebastian counties, as well as Lee Creek near Van Buren, affecting Crawford and Sequoia counties. The Portsmouth Port Authority last night reported a loose barge, which temporarily shut down Midland, Garrison Avenue, and I-540 bridges. Steve Amburn is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Tulsa.
Right now, it looks like the heaviest rain probably fell in parts of Carroll and Washington County, also in Benton County, a little bit into northern and western Madison County. And rainfall amounts look like they're going to end up somewhere between 7 and maybe 11 inches. Some very heavy rain fell up and through there over a prolonged period.
Northwest Arkansas and other parts of this state saw record flooding back in 2008 when more than 11,000 individuals and families applied for disaster assistance. But this event will likely not reach that proportion, Amburn said. A number of roads in Benton County are a mess, according to Doug Gay, spokesperson for the Benton County Sheriff's Department.
Well, we've been told by the Weather Service that we've had in excess of between 8 and 10 inches in the last 3 or 4 days. I don't believe that there is a single portion in the county that has not been impacted by all of that rain. Of course, the ground saturated and it's now runoff. We have roads. Schaefer Road is been undermined by the current, and there's actually large chunks of that road that's no longer there, so that road's going to be damaged and out of service for some time to come after the water recedes. Logan Cave Bridge is another area that has traveled fairly heavily. That's in the sort of in the southwest part of the county, yeah. And there's a bridge there, and we understand that that's been washed out. So there is nearly no roads that haven't been impacted by this rain. Low water, low-lying roads are going to be washed out. We're going to have a tremendous amount of damage once the water recedes, and we'll have a better understanding of exactly what that damage is.
The National Weather Service says western Washington County, Madison, and Carroll counties have been mostly affected. Kelly Cantrell is with the Washington County Sheriff's Office. She says they conducted 4 rescues last night.
Washington County Tactical Rescue Team rescued someone at Hazel Valley and Miller Road in Washington County. And then we had a gentleman who was, his car was going underwater. I think it got up to his door, a Washington County unit. And actually a wrecker was able to get him out. And then we had a rescue at Lake Francis. Thought it was in Washington County, but it ended up being in Benton County, and we just assisted to Silent Springs with that one. And then we had a family on White House Road that was stuck between two rivers or flood zones or flood areas. And they were able to get that family out.
In Carroll County, a Eureka Springs police dispatcher told KUAF that Leatherwood Creek in downtown Eureka Springs breached its masonry banks on Saturday, flooding portions of Main and Magnetic Streets. No business has reported damage, but Beaver Lake is on the rise. Alan Bland is park ranger with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers at Beaver Lake.
Well, it's very high right now. It actually, overnight, Beaver Lake rose 4 feet overnight, which is pretty incredible. That's just massive amounts of water coming into the lake. And we're at 1126 elevation, so we're getting pretty high there. We're doing exactly what the lake was designed to do, which is hold back absolutely as much water as we can so so that the other lakes are doing their thing, because we empty into Table Rock. Table Rock empties into Bull Shoals. So we're all holding all this massive rain event, that water as much as we can, so that we're not contributing to the downstream flooding on the lower White River and the Arkansas River and the Mississippi River.
Flood stage for Beaver Lake is 1,130 feet. Once it reaches that level, floodgates will be opened to prevent floodwaters from flowing over the dam. Alan Bland says several dozen campgrounds are also now closed due to flooding.
If you go down to like some of our parks, like Hickory Creek and stuff like that, you can actually see stuff floating down the lake, headed towards the dam. You can see hay bales and trees and logs and all kinds of things. So it's kind of a tricky time right now.
And Steve Ambern with the National Weather Service in Tulsa says it's not over.
Well, over the next couple of days, it looks like the frontal system is going to back up into the area, and we have another upper-level system that's going to try to move across. And when it does, it's going to pull more warm, moist, unstable air northward. So we're expecting more rainfall. This will probably start developing again later this afternoon. And given the storm motion, some of this stuff could track up across western and northwestern Arkansas. So it looks like we're not out of this yet. It may be Wednesday before we get done.
Authorities say if you encounter a flooded roadway while driving, beware. It only takes 2 feet of water to carry away an SUV or even a truck. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We reported several weeks ago that the Federal Farm Bill appropriation for the National Sustainable Agriculture Information Service, also known as the ATRA project based in Fayetteville, was threatened by the 2011 fiscal year congressional budget cuts. Last week, the ATRA staff learned its $2.8 million allocation for the current year was eliminated. ATRA staff members assist farmers, ranchers, market gardeners, extension agents, researchers, educators, and farm organizations, especially in economically disadvantaged and underserved communities. The ATRA project, with six regional offices, began in 1987 under the nonprofit National Center for Appropriate Technology, or NCAT, in Butte, Montana. Teresa Maurer has been the ATRA project director in Fayetteville for the last 15 years. ATRA employs 50 staffs across the country, with 12 jobs here in Northwest Arkansas.
You know, the immediate impact is we've got four people that have been laid off locally, as well as an intern and other people who have reduced hours. And there were a total of 20 laid off across all the offices of folks that had some or all of their time spent on the ATRA project. So it's very painful. I mean, especially this time of year when farmers are especially looking for our services. It's very, very hard for us to really be completely shut down with not very much notice.
Maurer was among those laid off, but she's also a working farmer. With her husband, Jim Morgan, she operates Round Mountain Sheep Farm, located east of Fayetteville. Last week, NCAT issued a statement saying it's considering alternative funding options.
We sort of have, I guess, three strategies. The first is, of course, trying to see if there's any possibility of restoring the funding in the 2012 budget, which is now what they're immediately starting to work on. But as you know from the national news, that is going to be very, very tough, but not impossible. But you know, we just we don't have a lot of hope for that, but we're still going to pursue it because there's so many people that stepped up and said, you know, look, we need this program, and we just hope there can be the political will to make it possible for the project to continue. The second strategy is we're immediately seeking bridge funding, and that would be from donations or sponsors or anything that we can think of that would help get people back to work. And the third is really just turning to our clients and supporters and saying, you know, look, you've valued the service for this time. What ideas do you have for us, you know, being able to continue the program?
ATRA promotes local and regional economies by assisting farmers and ranchers to become more profitable. It also works to protect natural resources, mitigate climate change by showing producers how to grow using more sustainable or even organic techniques, and reducing farming energy consumption.
This is Ozarks at Large. Heating and cooling a building throughout the year can cost a lot of money and require a large amount of energy. This is particularly true for a school district that is faced with keeping temperatures comfortable within several buildings. Springdale Public Schools has been taking steps to cut costs and increase energy efficiency by using geothermal heat pumps at some of its schools. Our Energy Corps reporter, Christina Thomas, has the story.
The ground beneath our feet contains a significant amount of energy in the form of heat. The temperature is either warmer or cooler than the air. That energy can be harvested and used to aid in the heating and cooling of our homes and buildings. In the summer, when the air is hotter than the earth, geothermal heat pumps transfer a building's heat deep into the ground, typically with water. When it resurfaces, it is cooler than when it went in. It is then used to help an air conditioner get a building to its optimum temperature, using less energy. When the air's temperature falls below the earth's temperature in the winter, the process works in reverse, using the earth's warmth to heat a building. The Springdale School District decided that geothermal might be of benefit to them back in 2002, when it was launching a building campaign. The district now has 5 elementary schools that use geothermal pumps to heat and cool their classrooms. A 6th will be completed in the fall. Jim Bradford, who has been on the Springdale School Board for 15 years, also works in the heating and cooling industry. He says that it is important, yet tricky, to maintain student and teacher comfort while remaining energy efficient. Geothermal helps to maintain that balance.
Energy efficiency is a big deal. The school district pays a lot of money for utility costs, and it is very much on the mind of those who are running our schools. We have some very dedicated people that are, on one hand, trying to save every dollar that they can, but on the other hand, the mission of the school is to educate children, and if they can not be bothered by temperature over and above or below what's reasonable, and it just becomes a good environment, they have proper ventilation, air, all of those kinds of things go into making the environment the very best for learning, and that's what the school district's all about, is kids to learn at the highest levels that they possibly can. And so there is a trade-off between teacher comfort, children comfort, and energy savings, obviously. But we want to provide that comfort at the lowest possible price.
Bradford and a group of others, such as the contractor and a consulting engineer, began investigating the concept to see if geothermal had an application for the district. Various studies were conducted and comparisons made to determine if the money could be budgeted for installation, but also to see what the expected return would be on the investment. They determined that they could expect to see a 7-year payback from the additional cost for geothermal units. The group felt like it was a good deal for the taxpayers, so they set the plan in motion. Dr. Ron Bradshaw, the Assistant Superintendent of Facilities for Springdale Public Schools, says that after the initial payback period, geothermal will save the district money for the life of the building. For him, the advantages are simple.
The advantage, you save energy by doing it. In other words, it doesn't pull as much electricity that it would require to normally heat and cool what you're trying to heat and cool.
He says the only reason to do something like this is to save utilities. Bradford's list of benefits includes other things, such as an aesthetically pleasing lack of outside units that is also a safety precaution for students, and the quiet nature of the geothermal units.
As we got into it, we realized that there were a number of other benefits. Some of the benefits were that when you drive up to one of these schools, you see absolutely nothing on the outside. And in the case of an elementary school where you have children that range from, 5 years old to 11 or 12 years old, playing in and around where these air conditioners have to sit, the fact that you had nothing there was a benefit. In fact, there were some avoided costs that were not immediately realized or planned on associated with barriers that we were constructing in Springdale around these around our outdoor units that you know had a cost to them as well. And as you make all that all your outdoor units go away, essentially, I mean it's in the ground if you want to look at it that way, that's invisible and certainly impervious to children, either damaging them or the children, you know, becoming a safety hazard for the children. That was a great benefit. Another thing is that when a compressor does not have to work as hard against higher head pressures associated with air cool equipment, they become quieter.
This lack of noise allows for less distraction and enhanced concentration for students and teachers. As Bradford said, the school district is all about enhancing the educational environment and increasing learning levels. The district recognizes further savings in the way of maintenance. Each elementary classroom has its own well and unit. This smaller size allows Dr. Bradshaw and his facilities crews to repair any troubled units in-house.
We basically do one unit per room or one unit per two rooms. And we still like that because the repair and efficient, it's so easy to go in with our staff and not have to have outside people come in to repair and maintain those units. So you got to maintain what you're doing, and it's very important, I think, to do it in-house. The more people you can do it on your own, you're going to save a lot of money for your school system, and Springdale does a great job of that.
All newly constructed elementary schools since 2004 have this geothermal feature. It is a more complicated thing to try to install them in massive high schools and junior highs, causing the cost to increase dramatically. Dr. Bradshaw says the district is doing other things to increase energy efficiency, the lifespan of these buildings, and savings, things such as installing LED lights, spray insulation, and lifetime flooring. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
The biennial Mid-America Photography Symposium featuring photographers from across the nation will be held on the 14th and 15th of May in Eureka Springs. The symposium, that has grown bigger over the last 10 years, provides an opportunity to photographers from the region to learn from each other. John Baltz is the 2011 host for the Mid-America Photography Symposium. According to him, the event has evolved immensely over the last 10 years.
Well, you know, the symposium started out as a small plan for just some photographers in the area to get together. We had a lot of younger photographers who are wanting to learn some things, and we decided to have a weekend in Eureka Springs and make a fun event of it. Our first symposium only had about 25 people, but those 25 people were so impressed with it, they told more people, and now it's we'll have about 300 people at the symposium this year with photographers coming in from California to North Carolina.
The Mid-America Photography Symposium weekend will begin with several four-hour-long workshops to provide in-depth knowledge regarding specific topics.
Then we have photographers that speak. We have Jennifer Wu, who is coming in, who is a Canon Explorer of Light, and she'll be talking about her nature photography. We have Bill Fortney, who is our keynote speaker for our dinner, and he'll be speaking, and he's the author of several books, including America from 500 Feet, where he and his son learn to fly ultralights, and they take and photograph from about 500 feet to see the patterns of the world in a way you don't normally see it. And then Sunday is the actual symposium, and it's breakout sessions. And in those sessions, we have about 20 to 25 photographers who will be speaking on various topics, and people sign up for the topics that they want to learn more about and to become better at.
John says the symposium is designed for every kind of photographer, from amateur to expert.
We have a session, a track of sessions that are Photo 101, which are really designed for the beginning photographer. They will talk about camera use and how to take photography. And then we have other sessions that are designed for the professional photographer and things they need to know about copyright and contract. And then there's some sessions that are just fun out there. We do a lot of model stuff. On Saturday night, we have something that's been annual from the very first one is what we call models that we shoot at Eureka Springs in the nighttime, and you can't take any flash. You have to find completely your light by the lights of the stores and fronts, and that's always a fun session. And then we have a haute couture session on Sunday, which is a model session at the end, and it's kind of the wrap-up of the event. And it's Sunday evening, and it's models in very haute couture clothing and wild makeup, and people really love to photograph those as well in downtown Eureka Springs.
The event attracts photography groups from Fort Smith, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Springfield, Missouri. Since photographers from different backgrounds and specialties come together during the event, the symposium helps them learn not only the advances in their fields, but also introduces them to other potential interests.
People get very pulled into their genres of photography. Some people like nature, some people like portraiture, some people like wedding. And one thing that we have always tried to do with the symposium is to make sure that we not only meet all those genres, but that we can also introduce people to new genres. One person who is such as this is Jason Crater, who will be speaking this year. And he came to a symposium and attended a session about wedding photography, found out that, you know, as a nature photographer, he had never really looked at wedding photography. And now he's very involved in wedding photography in Arkansas. And so the symposium gives you an opportunity also to look outside your genre, look outside those things that you've got and so used to that you don't even think about other options you can do with your photography.
The two-day event will also feature a print competition that was introduced 3 years ago. Interested individuals have to submit a hard copy of a photograph to enter the competition.
It is a true print competition. It is not an enter online. You have to actually submit a print. It can be 8 by 10 to 8 by 12. The deadline to enter is by April the 30th. And you can drop those off at a local Bedford Cameron Video or mail them to the address on the Mid-America Photography Symposium website, which is mapsym.org, to find that address. And it's six different categories. It's architecture, black and white, fashion, macro, nature, and landscape. And the top three of each of those categories are printed in a 20 by 13 print, which is on display during the symposium in the lobby of the Eureka Springs Conference Center.
The symposium is nonprofit in nature and relies mainly on volunteers and sponsors for their support. There's also a small event registration fee.
You can register for the Mid-America Photography Symposium online at www.mapsym.org. It's an online application that you enter, and you can pay your fees online as well through PayPal. And it's $150 to attend the symposium, but $25 of that is taken back as a rebate if you send 25 pictures you took during symposium. And we use these for publicity for the next symposiums. We figure, why have a specific photographer when we have a whole conference full of photographers? So you get $25 off just for sending a CD back of some pictures you took during the symposium.
The Mid-America Photography Symposium will be held on the 14th and 15th of May in Eureka Springs. The deadline to register for the event is May 7th, and to submit entries for print competition is April 30th. For more information, please log on to www.mapsym.org.
It's Monday, April 25th, 2011. Joining us now in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Hello.
Monday, if you want to get involved instead of just talking about theater, auditions are tonight at 7 o'clock for Gaslight at Fort Smith Little Theater. You can find out more at 783-2966. Or in Bentonville, you can go hear soprano Antonella Gazzol in concert. Mm-hmm. At 7 o'clock at the Shoemaker Center. It's free. And over in Mena at Ouachita Little Theater, a show called The Boyfriend, a musical comedy. Special performance tonight at 7:30 because their normal weekend run was interrupted by Easter yesterday.
Okay.
Tickets are $10 and you can find out more at 243-0186.
So it's theater and music for today.
And we'll come up with something else tomorrow.
All right. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large, and these are a few more things that we thought you might need to know. A state center for the developmentally disabled in Boonville risks losing its Medicaid certification on July 4th if it doesn't improve supervision of clients. This comes after a severely disabled resident there was left unattended in a van for 2.5 hours on March 25th. Regulators with the Office of Long-Term Care found that residents at the center were in, quote, immediate jeopardy of harm or death, but that designation was removed April 1st. Julie Munzel, spokeswoman for the State Department of Human Services, says the driver of the van was fired as a result of the incident.
There's concerns on the part of facility, but also concerns on the part of Office of Long-Term Care. Anytime you have clients who have supervision issues, that they be constantly monitored. And that's just something as a facility that you have to stay on top of.
The Boonville Human Development Center, which houses about 150 men and women, has had other problems over the last few years, including an incident of a resident choking to death on food.
Tickets to the 2011 Yonder Mountain String Band's Harvest Festival are now on sale. 4-day passes are available for $99. A $6 facility fee will be added to the price of each ticket. The festival is scheduled from October 13th through October 16th at Mulberry Mountain near Ozark, Arkansas. More information is available at yonderharvestfestival.com.
The city of Bentonville is hosting its 7th annual Clean the Streets Day on Saturday, May 14th. The project is part of the Great American Cleanup, the nation's largest community enhancement program held every year between March 1st and May 31st. The city invites volunteers to help pick up litter alongside city streets and trails in drainage ditches, detention ponds, and creek beds. Registration and cleanup will be from 8:30 through 11:30 a.m. on May 14th. Volunteers will receive trash bags, vests, gloves, and a t-shirt. To register for the City of Bentonville Clean the Streets Day, log on to www.bentonvilleAR.com and click on the Bentonville Volunteer Program link or call 271-6826.
The Arkansas and Kentucky baseball teams closed their 3-game series by splitting a doubleheader Sunday in Lexington, Kentucky. After Kentucky won the first game 3-1, Arkansas picked up a win in the series finale with a 4-1 victory. Arkansas is now 28-11 overall and 9-9 in the Southeastern Conference. The win in the second game of the doubleheader was the 1900th in the program's history. Arkansas returns to action tomorrow, hosting St. Louis. First pitch at Baum Stadium is set for 6:35 p.m.
The University of Arkansas's Research Frontier magazine can now be accessed by phone using QR codes, which will then help readers access videos, slideshows, and stories about the U of A faculty and student research. QR codes are two-dimensional barcodes designed often in a square matrix. Applications downloadable to smartphones can help read the QR code, which then directs the reader to a website linked with the code. The use of these codes will help readers watch videos and slideshows normally beyond the scope of a print magazine.
This is Ozarks at Large. Technology allows us to measure all sorts of physiological variables when exercising, such as heart rate and blood pressure. A local company called Human Performance Integrated Systems has developed software to help athletes make sense of all of these variables. Andres Angulo is a director of engineering and product development for the company.
The idea was to develop a system that would merge the engineering experience and data analysis with the physiology and performance related to the human body. And we started the company last year, a year ago. And we are pretty much getting finished with the first version of our software.
The software is called Athlete Forward. It's an online tracking and training tool for athletes and fitness enthusiasts. He says the new software is very flexible and can be used by people from any fitness level.
People who are just getting into exercise can use the tool by using the very simple workouts that are available. Or for the most advanced, the more advanced users, they can customize it, and they can create very complex workouts. And regarding our ability to do groups and reports is that you can actually create reports for entire groups, and that's another important aspect for the, for example, companies who are interested in looking at how the entire group is trending over time. You can basically virtually track any variable that you want and overimpose it to any other variable, so you can see some relationship between them.
The software allows the user to track a number of variables, such as blood pressure and the number of nutrients you eat during a meal. Angulo notes that the software doesn't measure these variables, but rather provides the user with the capability to track them. He adds that Athlete Forward is able to integrate with heart rate monitors and other fitness devices that allow you to directly upload information into systems. Angulo says one of the ways the software varies from other programs is it's extremely easy to use.
It has a very appealing design. It's very, very simple design. But at the same time, it's extremely powerful. So what I wanted to do with the software was create something that that would not be a barrier for people to track their workouts and their health and fitness variables. Over the years, I found that technology was a major impediment for people to track their information, or you know, adequate technological tools did not exist. And this is something that tries to address that issue.
Another unique quality is the software allows users to create fitness groups.
That allows you to have your close community or your close peers in a group with you, so that you can see what they're doing. So when you look at it from a health perspective, having the ability to work out or to do some type of physical activity in groups is usually a great motivator.
A basic version of the software is available at athleteforward.com for free. The software becomes fee-based when a user wants to access more advanced features.
Users can simply create a login. Once they create the login, they are directed to a public workout area where they can choose a number of workouts. All at that point, once they select the main workouts that they want to that they're going to be using throughout their activities, all they have to do is simply add those to their schedule, and they can set a goal or a plan, and then they can do what they can complete it with what they actually did, and then they can create a report and see the comparison, goal versus actual.
Angulo adds that this software can be beneficial to users by helping them improve their athletic activity.
You cannot improve what you don't know or you don't track. So this provides a very easy system to track your activities. So that's number one. Number two, a lot of people who begin an exercise program tend to stagnate if they're, for example, their goal is to lose weight. You can see a fairly rapid progress in the first few weeks after they begin the program, and then they stagnate. And there are reasons for that. And using the system and tracking not just their time, but also how they perceive the effort is, they can see that over time their body has adapted to the training or to the activity, And that's the reason for these technicians. Basically, they're not feeling that their sessions are challenging them enough to continue that trend of weight loss, for example.
More information is available at athleteforward.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Idi Agnihotri Madholkar.
And it's now time for our giveaway. Yes. So earlier in the program, Ithi, you told us about a
photography symposium in Eureka Springs.
Yes. So we were talking about photography. So our question today is, in 2009, Kodak, somebody who's very important in the photography world, retired a certain kind of film in 2009.
Correct.
We want to know, what was the name of the film? Was it A, Kodak Ektachrome, B, Kodachrome, or C, Eastman XX Black and White Negative Film?
You can call up with your answers on 1-800-522-KUAF, and the winner will receive a pair of Malco movie theater passes, which are valid at any Malco theater nearby.
Mm-hmm. So give us a call, and good luck.
This is Ozarks at Large, and we're back with our answer to our today's giveaway question. Mm-hmm. And we asked you, in 2009, Kodak retired which film out of these three? The A option was Kodak Ektachrome, B was Kodachrome, and C was Eastman XX Black and White Negative Film.
The answer
is B, Kodachrome. It was retired after 74 years of its very successful run.
So that was in 2009, so fairly recent. Okay, well, so we will take all of the correct answers, and we'll put your name in the ceramic cow and draw out a winner just in a little bit, and we will contact you. And today you get a pair of movie passes to any Malco Theater.
Congratulations to the winner, whoever that is.
Yes.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bethel Heights, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at our website, kuaf.com.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Ithi Agnihotri Madholkar.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a great day.